Jeffrey suit?
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Well, I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to the Oral Pleasure Podcast, the podcast for the short attention span. I'm your host, Billy Rutledge, and we have a very special guest on the line, a March Madness edition of Oral Pleasure today, number 18 on the list. And who better to have it with Cameron Mills, the former UK walk-on. He's hit his fair share of shots in the NCAA tournament. Cameron, how are you doing today?
I'm well, Billy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really glad you were able to jump on. We were able to join together on Monday for the Monday Marathon, had about 2 hours of talking brackets on 790 KRD, and now got you on the podcast.
Absolutely. And you know what, Billy? You and I have worked together before. I don't remember you being a Louisville fan.
I'm not, Cameron.
How did I miss that?
No,
it's, you're not.
No, I'm not a Louisville or a UK fan. I went to Western Kentucky University, originally from Florida, and so I never chose an allegiance.
So during that show on Monday, you basically were just playing devil's advocate.
Yes, I had to stand out some way, and with Michael Bennett and Cameron Mills.
I can understand why you pick us. Michael's very obnoxious sometimes, not me, though.
Michael Bennett, a former guest of this podcast, if you want to go back and listen to his interview. Cameron, let me explain to you how the podcast works. We have three sound bites. We'll listen to them and then immediately react. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, let's see what we got up first.
Got the look like he's in total control. For the tie. Tipped out. Mills for the lead.
Oh! They've been waiting on it.
That's his first match.
So there you have it, the March Madness theme song from CBS. Cameron Mills hit a shot in 1998 against Duke in the Elite Eight, and I think any Kentucky fan that hears that is instantly goes back to that moment. Cameron Mills is my guest here on the Oral Pleasure Podcast, a walk-on at UK from 94 to 98. And Cameron, what is your first thoughts when you hear that soundbite, when someone talks to you about that game? Where does your mind go immediately?
I guess it definitely reminds me of March Madness. It's like the old NFL films orchestra thing. And there's only one thing you associate that with. And same thing here. The problem is, though, Billy, and gosh, this sounds cynical and lame, but I do place an association for the tournament, but it doesn't get that particular piece of music doesn't get me excited for the tournament. It's like One Shining Moment. I hate that song. And I know that's sacrilege, but it suits its purpose at the end of the tournament. Everybody loves it. It is the worst song ever. I mean, it's just if you just read the lyrics, it's just dumb.
And the so ball I know, is
I'm kind of hearing the lyrics when they go through, so I'm not listening to the or watching the highlight, because that's what's great about that song. It's just been associated with all those great highlights from the NCAA tournament throughout the year. So anyway, it is March Madness. I am excited about that. It's not the music.
Well, you're coming out strong out of the gates, Cameron. Trash in One Shining Moment. I think that's a song that brings nostalgia to fans as much as that hearing your shot, the shot heard around the bluegrass. So that's surprising to me.
Well, by the way, I don't think my shot made One Shining Moment, Billy.
What? It did not make the montage.
Because as big as that shot might be in some people's heads, it's kind of grown over years as these things tend to do. I've had UK fans come up to me in the last 10 years specifically, and their exact words are, I will never forget where I was when you hit that, and now it varies, anywhere from 25 to 35, sometimes I think I heard a 43-foot shot to beat Duke in the last second. Well, it was a 19-foot shot, and it wasn't in the last second. So it's this, I'll never forget where I was, but we've forgotten every other part of it. Great as that shot was, Scott's shot, with 45 seconds left against Duke, that basically that won us the game. I honestly still believe that the reason people remember my shot is, yeah, it gave us the lead for the first time in the game. It kind of gave us that instant hope that we made the comeback in the moment. But then this poster came out like a year later in Lexington, and it was dubbed Shot Heard Across the Bluegrass. It wasn't called that before the poster came out. So the poster started kind of lending this a little more additional importance to that shot where, and I guess this goes back to mathematics. Every shot in that game mattered. Every point mattered. But Scott coming up big with 45 seconds, if he doesn't make his shot, then, I mean, none of us have the storybook ending of our careers that we wanted.
Well, you entered into UK folklore that day, Cameron, and I think most UK fans know about that shot. Let me be honest with you, Cameron. If I would have made that shot back in 1998, I think all of that would have gotten to my ego a little bit. I think I would have thought I was a little bit better than I was, because I believe that was your first made basket of the game in that game. So tell me about how your life kind of changed after that shot and how you had to deal with kind of the fame and fortune that came after it.
Well, actually, that was the first shot I made in the tournament, Billy, not just the game.
In the whole tournament?
I was in the whole tournament. I was a big gopher. That was the fourth game in, and I had yet to hit a basket. And what was frustrating about that, really, my whole senior year was frustrating in this way, is I became famous on the Kentucky team. Because if you're on the Kentucky basketball team in the state of Kentucky, you're kind of a signed celebrity, right? Even if you're the walk-on that everyone's not sure what number or what his last name is
right
at the end of the bench, that's what I was for the first 2 years of my career. And if that's all I'd ever been, I'm fine with that. I mean, my dream was to go and wear the uniform of Kentucky and perhaps play at Kentucky. The way it turned out, I couldn't have written it any better, honestly. But I wasn't the Duke shot didn't give me any more fame necessarily as what happened the year before, which was honestly out of nowhere. And I have no reason, I have no explanation for why, other than Coach Pitino just is very good at treating all 13 of his players from very best to very worst the same. He doesn't yell at his walk-ons anymore or his All-Americans anymore. He treats you all the same. He expects you to be ready at any time of your career every night to play. And he coaches you as though he's got to prepare you to play. So I actually, out of nowhere in 97, when Derek Anderson went down with a torn ACL, the only other two guard we had was me. And I barely played. I'd done garbage time up to that minute. Well, Derek tears his ACL. 2 weeks later, I'm coming back from a concussion injury, and there's nobody. Maybe we could play down. Edwards did it too, and I think we tried to. Coach tried all different things to keep from putting me in the game a big minutes. I'd mess it up. I'd lose defensive assignments. But all of a sudden, in the SEC tournament that year, I started hitting shots. And, I think four consecutive games in a row had, bested my all-time points scored in a UK game. And at one point, I was second leading scorer on the team. So I'd actually had a better junior year than I did senior year. So I say all that, Billy, but the Duke shot didn't give me any fame or any more than fame than what happened the year before. The problem was, and this goes back to the humility thing, and you're exactly right, I had completely embraced this run I put on in the 97 tournament. I was enjoying myself. All of a sudden, I'm not just a Kentucky player. I'm a Kentucky player who plays. I'm hitting three-point shots, that's my thing. In the tournament, getting us to the national championship, it just couldn't have gotten any better. And the result of that was the summer between junior year and senior year, I didn't work. I didn't work on my game. I didn't try to get better that year. And that's when you get better as a player, individually, is in the summers. It's not during the year. You hope you make improvements, but you're looking for improvements for the team there. I didn't get better as a player. So my entire senior year, I just didn't shoot the ball the way I should have. And so every three-pointer I hit, which were far less in 98 than they were in 97, they mattered. I mean, it was like I felt like, okay, now we got it. Now here we go. We're going to start hitting them the same clip we did in 97. I never did. I had three at the very end of my career in very big moments, which I'm very, very happy for. But, yeah, I definitely got I got humbled by the lack of continuation of hitting great shots. How about that?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Cameron Mills, our guest here on the Oral Pleasure Podcast. And, Cameron, before we move on to our next soundbite, I do want to talk a little bit about the tournament this year and what's upcoming. We do have some storylines for Kentucky, PJ Washington possibly with an injury and a walking boot recently. We also have Louisville matching up with Rick Pitino's son, Richard Pitino, in Minnesota in the first round. Cameron, when you look at this year's tournament, 2019 college basketball, what stands out to you and what do you think will be the defining moment of this tournament?
You know what? It always amazes me. At the end of every Selection Sunday, there's a group of people that aren't happy. And the media kind of consistently stays that way. Because, that's, to be fair to them, that's their job. Their job is to kind of sit back and evaluate and critique to make things better, whether it's our government, whether it's something as trivial as basketball. I don't know that it's been as consistent or lingered, the criticism of the selection process, as it has this year. And I actually think it's, for the first time, I can't remember what I'm saying, I don't think it's necessarily fair. You know, Mike DeCourcy, who writes for the Sporting News, who I love dearly, he has been all, he hasn't stopped talking about the NCAA failing, I guess it's Michigan State, to get a one seed instead of a two. And then, who's the other team? Oh, Tennessee and Cincinnati. They changed one seed or moved someone around. So they didn't have to, I think he said, travel 120 miles. So just very specific things that he and then a lot of the other members, they keep going. And I realize, well, they have nothing to report on. They have nothing to, you know, what are they going to do? So they kind of rehash stories and rehash conversation and find new little areas to critique and maybe fix the selection process. But here's the thing. The NCAA tournament, it's just that. It's the NCAA tournament. They can put whoever they want in this thing. They're under no obligations to anybody to do anything. I mean, they've written themselves some rules. They're more guidelines. And if you read them, it gets very convoluted and confusing very, very quickly as far as, okay, these are 10 people, by the way, 10 people who may or may not have had basketball in their background. At least two of them I can think of don't. And then they also are supposed to have run. This is my one critique. They're supposed to have all during the season, they're running their program, right? Because the selection committee is all athletic directors and commissioners of conferences. That's what makes up the selection committee. So during the season, these 10 people, according to the NCAA's rules or guidelines, they are quote unquote experts in their field or something, but it's talking about basketball, specifically talking about they're expert. At this point, they're experts because they have spent countless hours. That's the other quote. Countless hours watching basketball. No, they haven't. They've spent countless hours trying to raise money to hire a new football coach or trying to, you know, decrease the debt of their athletic department or figure out, you know, what softball. They've spent countless hours running their program. They have spent 0 hours.
Right, and they introduced a new thing this year called the net rankings, and teams that had higher net rankings were left out of the tournaments than some other teams. So I think you're right, Cameron. They can kind of handpick the games that they want to choose, and then they can create drama.
That's right, exactly right. And well, they don't, and the thing is, they don't have to decree drama. We do that ourselves because whether we're UK fans or other fans, we're not happy unless we're miserable. Unless we can fear something, unless we can worry about something. The PJ Washington stuff right now is a perfect example. I realize he may have a boot. I realize what that might indicate. But UK doesn't seem to be worried. They're saying it's precautionary. And that's all the information we have. So the rumors are now starting to fly all over the place. I promise you, UK is not sharing this with their best friends that it might eventually filter down to another system. So it's just one of those funny things where this time of year, more than any other, everyone's put in a microcosm. All the criticism, all the media, all the attention, all the focus of the people that are in sports media to this one tournament because it is the most exciting. Well, I don't know how to qualify it, but it is three amazing weeks of sports. And one of the reasons is because the selection committee has continuously failed to seed the teams properly. That's why we get the upset. That's why we get a 12 beating a, or they beat a 5, 4. I always get that confused. But that's why we had a 16 over 1. Now, a lot of that was just one team played better that night. True. But the selection committee gets it right, then we've got chalk all the way down the guidelines. And nobody wants that.
Final question before we move to our next soundbite, Cameron. What's your confidence level in this Cats team this year? They drew the bracket. Their number 2 seed looks like they could face North Carolina in the Elite Eight. What are your expectations for this team?
Well, the only possibility I don't – well, I guess playing Duke would be a possibility I don't like because I understand everyone's just kind of irrational fear.
Hey, revenge game in the title game might be pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's the only place we see him now. But, you know, before the selection came out, there was conversation among UK fans about where would you want to be, assuming that, you know, we were going to play 3-6 games and win the national championship. If that's the case, you know, where would you want to be and who would you want to play? What would you be seated? And everyone's faces are wherever we see Duke the latest. So it's just been fun kind of watching all of this kind of get manufactured and stirred up. And And then, you know, the theories come and all this kind of stuff. It doesn't get better than this as far as something that's enjoyable.
All right, let's see what we got up next.
On Cameron Mills Radio.
This is Cameron Mills Radio. To interact with the show, call 859-280-2287 or statewide at 1-800-606-4263. Or you can tweet to at Cameron Radio.
Little return of the Mac here on the Oral Pleasure Podcast presented by iHeartRadio. Make sure you stick around for the sounds of the week at the end of the podcast. Make sure you also subscribe on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Spreaker, and iTunes. Cameron Mills is our guest. He is a UK walk-on basketball player from 94 to 98, and after, he now hosts the Cameron Mills Radio Show Sundays from 7 to 9 on 630 WLAP. Cameron, what kind of made you get into radio and make you start in the career of media?
Basically, friends in the media that I'd made over my 4 years at UK. We're basically taught, rightfully so, by the way, by our coaches, and in some cases we have professors come in and lecture us. When you are asked the question as an athlete, the person asking the question, their intentions are not necessarily pure. It's not that they want you to, you know, spill some big secret. They want good sound bites.
Want
right?
a sound bite,
they want
yeah.
you to talk. Yeah, they want you to talk, and they want you to be detailed. They don't want to hear cliches. Well, to prevent a situation where a teammate or a player might actually spill some information that they shouldn't, whether by, you know, accident or whatever, we're basically told and taught. It's the scene from the back of the bus at Bull Durham. You know, you be short, you be quick, and you get out, and you specifically don't give them anything interesting. Well, whether or not my sound bites were interesting or not is neither here nor there, but I could talk. And I could talk in full sentences, and as you're seeing here, I can string four or five, or in some cases 25 to 30 right in a row. And so even my freshman year and sophomore year, when I'm not playing at all, I'm maybe averaging 40 seconds a game or something, I still have media at my locker after the game wanting my thoughts, which was scary and funny because here's Tony Dell. Go talk to him. He played. And they did. But then they'd also kind of come to mind because I could kind of give them something. And so that kind of that relationship of, well, Cameron will talk about it or Cameron can talk about it, it just kind of kept going during my times in the UK. And then as soon as I got done playing, you find yourself in a situation where, okay, I don't want to play basketball anymore, right? I was burnt out my freshman year. I don't want to keep this going. I love the game, but not enough to learn to hate it because it's so tiresome and I've done it all my life. But – it's just a situation where that's all I wanted to do. So when it was done, I wanted it to be done, but I still wanted to touch basketball somehow. So the media was the perfect opportunity to do that. So I got asked to be on a pregame and postgame call-in show before the UK network would come on with Dick Gabriel and Leland Conway and some other iHeart brothers of ours. And I just enjoyed doing it. And I got progressively, probably slowly, but still progressively better at it, more confident at it. And so I guess 4 years ago, they just asked me, hey, would you like your own show? And I think I turned them down three or four times just because I didn't think I'd be good. I can be a sidekick, you know, sitting in the corner and rolling out a sarcastic remark every now and then. That's easy. But going through, you know, like my producer gets good at this, you know, kind of wrapping your mind around a scene, you know, kind of coming up with it in three or four seconds, and then launching into it and presenting it on your show, it's not as easy. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes not. And so I do my show now because I want to get better at it. But basically, bottom line is, I made friends with all the media. I wouldn't give them cliches, and they've continued to ask me over the years to be on shows. This is one of my busiest weeks of the year, and I'm 20 years removed.
Yeah, and I believe that the media has probably changed a lot since the days that you were playing at UK, along with social media and the NCAA players trying to fight for more rights and more payments and more peanut butter on their crackers nowadays. What was your biggest challenge in that transition? And when you look at the guys today, some of the players on the UK teams or the athletes in the NCAA, do you find that they are doing a lot of the same things that you are, kind of the same mannerisms, the same NCAA tournament, or is it kind of a completely different game from when you played in 98?
Well, I think there's always eras in sports, right? And I think that one of the biggest eras is the one before yours. So I could go back and watch any segment of NBA, which I never played, or Kentucky basketball, which I did. And if you look back, those players always look slower. They always look less athletic. They basically look worse than you believe you were.
Right.
If you look ahead at the guys currently playing, you just feel like this team would run us out of the gym by 40 points in the first half. So you kind of, this is always this fun thing of when you watch games thinking it's changed so much. And the reality is it has. I mean, you got guys playing AAU all year round. There wasn't a lot of lifting of weights for actual basketball teams in high school when I played. There is now. I don't think the players have changed much, though you could probably convince me that they have.
They probably shoot a few more three-pointers today now than
well, you know, I don't know. I've been actually, it's funny you bring that up, Blake, because that to me is one of the interesting points about our schedule the rest of the way in the tournament is because, you know, basically Auburn's a great team that they're winning and dying by a three-point shot. Right now they're hot. And because they're hot, they've won the SEC tournament, and they could, you know, if they stay hot, they could go three or four teams deep in this thing. Kentucky this year is frustrating for me because – We're not shooting poorly from three. I mean, I'm not looking at the latest statistic for the year, but you go back the last 25 years, basically Kentucky basketball teams hit around 35% from the 3-point line. The better teams shoot slightly more than that, around 39 or 40, but there's not a whole big variance there. The problem is we don't shoot many 3-point shots. You know, we have basically open shots more often than we take the 3-point shots. And so, that's everything. But to answer your question, I think the consistency of schedule is what keeps players from, you know, getting into a different – it keeps things from changing too quickly. Because these guys are – no matter where they go, all week there was conversation about, well, where are these teams going to play their first-round games? It did not matter to us. We cared two whits. Because all we were going to see was the inside of a gym, an arena – a bus, a hotel room, or an airplane. That's it. There was no visiting family. There was no, going to a movie.
No social media.
Well, there was one very specific day of media, and you had a schedule, and it was, this is all they got. So, you know, which I'm sure they still do today. But it's more controlled now. Basically, the NCAA tournaments, or the NCAA, they're gripping harder and harder around their cash cow. So they're just trying to find every reason in the book for kind of keep it the way it is, not ruin it, which I'm not sure how they would, but keep that money coming in.
Cameron, before we switch gears to our final soundbite of the Oral Pleasure podcast, tell me a little bit about Cameron Mills Ministries. I know you do a lot with your faith, and you talk to a lot of young men and women throughout the state of Kentucky and even throughout the United States. What was that transition like to become and get into the ministry and kind of tell me about how you try to impact lives today?
Well, it's actually an easy and fun transition because I was done with basketball. It happened in 1998, about 2 months after we won. Because basically what I was transitioning to was what I felt called to do since I was 12 years old. I always felt I'd be a youth pastor at a church because other than Christ and my parents, there are three youth pastors that have played significant moments in my life. And so I kind of thought, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I feel called to ministry. I love youth. Going on mission trips to Panama City Beach, which is a classic thing in the Southeast, that, you know, that sounds fun. Not ever seeing the hard work on the other side. But I just kind of thought that's what I would do. And then UK happens. And all of a sudden, at the end of my career at UK, because I'm open about my faith, I get invitations to, you know, speak at a Sunday school class here. And then eventually I got asked to speak at a Sunday morning worship service there. And so my first, I think starting June 3rd of 98, so it's 2 or 3 months after my career was over, I had, and all of this has everything to do with us winning the championship that year and doing well the year before. I had 2 years of speaking engagements lined up almost every day. So it was a fun transition to get into what I felt like my career was going to be. It was not a fun transition to get into something that I felt, and we all feel this way about if we do what we love, we always feel like you never burn out. Well, because you love doing it, you tend to say yes a lot more than no,
right?
And so you burn out a lot quicker. So it was one of those things where real life happened. I mean, everything up to that point was kind of dreamy, and high school, and what we tell our kids even today is that, wait, so you're in the real world. Well, that happened in 98 after the tournament.
And that kind of business has to have a much more gratifying effect on you than maybe a college basketball athlete or a radio show on Sundays. If you get to look somebody in the eye and preach something like that, I think you can see a change in them, and it can make a change in you.
Well, you certainly hope there is one, because, you know, and that's the thing to fight. The problem is there's no scoreboard at the end of a sermon. So you don't know if you've had an impact. You don't know if you did well tonight. And the reality is you shouldn't care, because, I mean, you should go do the best you can. But you do hope there's value in your work, right? And I get it. My dad was an insurance salesman for 35, 40 years. I don't know how on earth he got up at 6 o'clock every day to go to work. I mean, I do now. He had a family that he felt he had to take care of. But I get to go to work every day and do what I love. And that was a fun transition. I enjoyed it, and I still get to do it today.
All right, let's see what we got up next.
A constitutional right that we have been given and that has existed for 200 and some odd years, and the responsible people can handle it just fine.
The biggest takeaway is that people who are allowed to carry these guns now don't have the proper training or how to interact with the police if they are approached. It's a safety issue for us. I relate it to basically driving a vehicle. Would you stick a 16-year-old in a vehicle without any training?
Perfect song for that one, Def Leppard, Billy's Got a Gun. There's been some recent legislation changes in Kentucky, and Cameron Mills is our guest here on the Oral Pleasure podcast, and let's see if we can get him out of his comfort zone a little bit. You heard Governor Matt Bevin and Barry Wilkerson, who is the St. Matthews Chief of Police, talking about the new law that Kentucky has just passed. They've become the 16th state to pass a constitutional carry law. Matt Bevin signed this into law, which allows gun owners to carry a concealed weapon without a permit over the age of 21 years old. Now, before, you had to have training and a permit to carry a concealed weapon, but now in the state of Kentucky, you are allowed to carry a gun concealed without having to go through training and purchasing that permit. Cameron, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that this is a reinforcement of constitutional rights, or do you think this is something that will increase gun violence in the future?
No, I definitely don't think it'll increase gun violence. I think it actually might lessen it to a point, but I'm not even sure about that. But what's perfect about your question, Billy, is I've actually recently decided, because I love hiking and I love photography, that I needed to buy my first weapon. And it's just, more than anything, it's just to make me feel safe enough, and not necessarily against people. My first thought a lot of times when I get out in the wild is, you know, wild animal. It's bear in Kentucky. It's mountain lion out in the west. And sure enough, I'm out there 2 weeks ago hiking in Colorado, and within a mile of starting my hike, mountain lion, and then elk. And people don't think that elk is dangerous. They are. So it's more, you know, I would not get out the trail. And by that, I would mean my car a lot of times, and go for, you know, hikes to find cool photography moments. I wouldn't do that simply because I don't know what's on the other side of that wall. I don't know what's on the other side of that hill. I don't know if there's a crazy animal. I don't know if there's a crazy person. I don't know anything. Therefore, and I have nothing necessarily to keep myself protected in a life or death situation, because, Billy, I'm not that guy that can kill a mountain lion with his bare hands. At least I don't think I am. So I just kind of decided, okay, let's start looking into this, getting like a small concealed weapon, just so you know you have it, and you'll be a little more bold in going across or on the other side of that, just because you don't know. So because of that, I've been reading a lot, learning a lot. I don't see the need for this change. I understand, well, it's your right to do it, but at the same time, with all of our rights, with our expectations and responsibilities, I don't know that this one was needed. And to be fair to those on both sides of this issue, I'm sure they both have valid reasons for why this was or wasn't needed. I didn't realize Kentucky was the 16th state to have done this.
Well, let me give you some reasons, Cameron, and then you can tell me if you still feel the same way. Proponents of the bill are mentioning that you can already carry weapons openly without a permit or training. But if you conceal your weapon with a coat or a jacket, then that is breaking the law. So they are seeing that as semantics, and they're just reinforcing their Second Amendment right there. People on the other side of the fence are saying that it's now easier for convicted felons, domestic abusers, and, you know, people that have a past that, of violence to be able to carry a weapon concealed in a public place. Now, I think that most people that go on a trail and fight mountain lions can already have their gun.
Easy there. Easy with the word fight.
Well, yeah, right. They already have their gun out. I think this is more of like the grocery store Kroger or the New Zealand mosque. This is kind of a...
A couple things. You don't actually have it out. You have it hidden when you're going for a hike. You don't brandish your gun when you're just walking around. So you got it in a holster, either hidden or otherwise, but you don't have it out and about. You still got to go get it. I guess the thing is that, okay, if we're talking criminals, well, they're going to do, whether it's the law or not, they're going to do what they need to do in their situation to feel like they can get away with what they need to get away with. Right. So I guess that's my pushback as far as like why we didn't need it to change. The gun thing to me, and I'm sorry I'm so boring on this one, Billy, because I think a lot of it is I'm just now digging into things I've heard for years on both sides that matter, things that concern both sides. I'm getting into it personally, and so I'm starting to but I'm still very, very 50-50 on a lot of it. And so I'm just boring when it comes to this. I don't know enough other than I know we've got the right. But just because we have the right to bear arms, I get the other side, the left side of, well, okay, but at what point? I mean, we have the right to bear arms, okay? Does that mean, and someone may decide, laughed at it, but I guess it's somewhat a valid statement. Does that mean that you, as a simple citizen, have the right to own a nuclear weapon? Well, pretty sure we wouldn't allow that. Someone arguing the point that that's a stupid point said, well, you can't, your average citizen can't afford a nuclear weapon. Well, okay, but then maybe only our rich would. So it gets so deep in the weeds, and both of them have valid points. So it's just kind of one of those things where I think on both sides, there's a lot of ignorance of why one side says they want to need them and have the right to them, and while the other side says yes, but to a point.
A lot of people have a different opinion than you, Cameron. They're either for one side or against. And I happen to agree with you in that instance that I am middle of the fence on this. I don't have a strong opinion on it. But there was an interesting soundbite that we included there on the Oral Pleasure podcast of Barry Wilkerson saying, would you let a 16-year-old behind the wheel without any training? Now, I am all for people having their Second Amendment right and having their gun and be able to protect their family. But why would you ever take away training from someone? Why would you ever make an implement or make a fact to take away an extra step for a citizen to be trained, properly trained, where you can clean the gun and you can know how to discharge it and know when it's gone wrong? People today, they can get a weapon. They have no idea what's in their hands, and they can hurt themselves or somebody else.
That's right. That's very true. You know, that was my frustration, I think, immediately with this. Okay, again, because I'm walking through it. I fired guns in my youth, but, you know, not ever really taking a whole lot of responsibility for them. The scout leader above my head took responsibility for them as far as, like, making sure I did it the right way. Well, now I'm an adult, so I have to know the right way and I figure it out. And you can buy – look, in Kentucky, because every state's different when it comes to most of this, I can buy a gun and not have to have any training in its use or gun use, basic gun training.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I can buy a car, and basically I don't have to have any training on that too. Now, the difference is that I'm going to know. You're gonna know if I'm out and about in my car, I'm in my car. You're not going to know if I've had any training in a gun. You're not going to know if I'm, you know. And I think that's what makes a lot of people really nervous when they come into contact with it the first time. What, 4 or 5 weeks ago, when I first started looking at this, I'd go to Bud's Gun Gallery in Lexington. There's guns everywhere.
Yeah.
But these are all people who've been around them. They feel comfortable with them, and they have a lot of respect for them. And so within 3 or 4 days, you start to feel comfortable. You feel safer. You go, it's just night and day difference between all of a sudden, I don't have guns in my life, to all of a sudden, now I'm here for 2 hours and there's guns everywhere. And I was just going to shoot on the range because I told my dad, I said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it the right way and get training. So I wish training would be more mandatory, but you know, that's where the concept. Well, but you're right to do it.
And that's where we agree. And you know, yeah, regardless of your opinion, we have such a melting pot in this right, country, that you know, thoughts and prayers can only go so far.
Yeah, but Billy, real quick, I think there's probably, I really do, I thought there's more people like you and I than there are on the other two sides.
As I far hope as so.
You have a right to do or you don't.
God, I think
we're operating out of a lot of ignorance. That's why we are 50-50, maybe. Uh-huh. So we're not as outspoken about it. We just don't know.
Yeah. Cameron, big thank you for coming on the podcast. Are you okay if I hit you with a little rapid fire before we end it?
Sure, yeah.
All right, what was your first car?
My first car was I'm going to forget what year, but it was a Chevrolet Blazer, one of their first SUVs. My parents got used.
Okay, all right, nice. Most famous person in your phone?
I don't know.
Coach Cal? Coach Cal?
Oh, I don't have Coach Cal's number.
Really?
I could not call you if I needed to. And again, this is not a critique of Cal at all. I've met him. I live in Lexington, as does he. Have a Kentucky connection, as does he. But he's not my coach. So if that was Tubby still down there or Coach Patino, I'd be down once a week watching practice. Well, you know, I'm 20 years removed from my career, and that's not my coach. So even though that's my program, look, I don't want a bunch of has-beens invading my practice if I'm currently playing. You know, so I occasionally will kind of knock on that door. But I think a lot of us former players, we just kind of, look, we had our time. This is their time. You know, there's certain times we want to come and be around it and go to a practice or go to a game. And you know, certain times we're fine watching it at home on TV.
Is Patino on your phone?
Yes.
You want to call him up right now? See if he's going to the game?
I would do that, but I'd put you on mute.
Two more here. Best concert that you've been to?
Best concert. I'll take the most recent concert, and that was Mumford & Sons here in at Rupp Arena. They're one of my favorite bands. And they were good.
You're telling me Mumford & Sons is the best live music you've seen in your life?
No. That's why I changed your question to most recent, because I just didn't. And I haven't been in a concert in a while. Best live concert. Okay, this is going to sound very 90s, but...
Well, don't say Nickelback.
No, that's not... They're 2000s to me. They're not nice. But just as guilty, Dave Matthews Band.
Okay. All right, I can get behind that. Final one. What's your tourney pick this week, or this NCAA March Madness?
I honestly don't think I've ever not picked Kentucky, Billy, so I'm not going to start this year.
Cameron Mills, big thank you for coming on the podcast. You can follow him on Twitter, at Cameron Mills with a Z on the end. Cameron, best of luck, and enjoy watching the games this month.
Thanks, Billy. Same to you.
And that's going to do it for us. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Billy R Sports, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. Oral Pleasure, the podcast for the short attention span. And now, it's time for the sound of the week.
Having Coach go through that last year, I remember us being in practice and him always just telling us that he just wanted to be there with us. All he thought about while he was in the hospital was us. So, you know, we rallied together, and it's just a great win for us, for our program, and I'm just happy.
Nets have come back from 25 down to start the fourth quarter. Harris to inbound. Nets out of timeout. They get it in to Hollis Jefferson up top. Three with two. Rondé driving. A floater is gone. He banked it in with 0.8. Rondé Hollis Jefferson puts the Nets on top.
Just 48 hours ago, we didn't know if we were going to be in this, and I didn't know if these two seniors were going to ever get to play in the NCAA tournament, and now they've got Belmont's first win, so it's a big night for us.
Dirk right now setting the middle screen. Doncic at the top of the arc will drop it to Dirk straight away against Williams. Rise and fire! There it is! A revolutionary passes a revolutionary 31,420 points in the magnificent career of Dirk Nowitzki.
This is ISIS on election day, my election day, and this is ISIS now. So that's the way it goes.
think it just makes success more worthwhile once you go through the tough ones, right? I mean, that's really what it's all about. I mean, when we first started with myself and Shaq, I mean, we went through years where we were swept out of the playoffs. We went through those dark times as well. And you just kind of stick with it. And then, you know, when you come out of it, things are better for it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We do not own any of the audio or music played in today's show. Credit to ESPN, ABC News, and iHeartRadio. And we'll see you guys next time.